This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen. On sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for August 25th, 2017. On today's show, we'll go to the water cooler. HT will be talking about watching a Korean reality television show. Ben Pearson will be talking about visiting the Broad Museum. In the news, we'll be talking about another Joker movie that's apparently in development. Matt Reeves clarifies his comments on the Batman being part of the DCEU. The Obi-Wan movie's working title has been revealed. What does it tell us about the movie? A Starsky and Hutch reboot from James Gunn. Live-action Teen Titans casting. And some comments from James Cameron on Wonder Woman that you won't want to miss. And in the mailbag, we'll be talking about Justice League and if it will destroy everything that Wonder Woman has accomplished. That's the question. That's not my words. That's the listener. With me on today's show are Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And Huai Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
Okay, so I've already talked about what I have been up to this week with the Medge Castle stuff. And you can read, I actually wrote up it in depth on the site. You can read it on slashfilm.com if you want more of that than what I said earlier this week. But HT, what have you been up to?
So I recently discovered that Steven Yeun, who is from The Walking Dead and Okja, was recently on this Korean reality series that I've watched a couple episodes of. But it's called The Return of Superman, and it's possibly the purest reality show you could ever ask for, because it follows these celebrity dads for 48 hours in their life as they try to take care of their kids without the mom. So the mom goes away for like 2 days, and the dad has to, you know, raise the kid on his own with cameras and everything. And it's a lot of just like hapless dads kind of trying to make their way and like figure out what they've been missing this whole time with the moms taking care of everything. But it sparked a really great dad parenting phenomenon in South Korea, which has been sort of more traditional in its gender roles. But mostly it sparked a lot of viral clips of adorable babies eating and being spoiled by celebrities because it's a super popular show. So celebrities will come on and do like promotion for their current like movies or TV shows or music. And usually it's mostly like Korean celebrities, but here Steven Yeun showed up, I'm presuming because he was promoting for Okja. But it was adorable because he was playing with this one kid, William, who's a half Australian kid of an Australian comedian. And the kid cried immediately as soon as he saw Steven Yeun, but they bonded after he fed him, of course. So there's a lot of your regular eating clips, just like kids eating are just adorable clips. So it's a really fun show. It's really pure. It's definitely something to watch when you're just kind of bogged down by the terrible news of 2017, because even if it's a reality show, it's definitely something that feels less scripted and just more about like these day-to-day lives of these Korean celebrities.
And where can you watch this again?
It's actually all on YouTube. So if you search for The Return of Superman, KBS is the channel. They have uploaded all the episodes with English subtitles too. You have to press the little CC button, but they have everything up to like last week's episode of the episodes. And they're all like an hour and a half long. I used to watch it for Tablo, who's a great Korean rapper from the group Epic High. Huh. So yeah, it's a really good show.
Ben, what have you been up to this past week?
My wife and I on Saturday went to the Broad Museum in downtown Los Angeles for the first time. Yeah, I always thought it was the Broad Museum because that's how it's spelled, but it's named after like people's last names, and it's like actually there it houses their collection, like this couple's collection, and apparently the way that you pronounce their last name is Broad, so it's the Broad Museum. It's a really cool like contemporary art museum that just opened a couple years ago, directly across the street from the Walt Disney Concert Hall in downtown LA, and we're not normally big museum goers, but we've been to a few here and there. And if
you're in LA, you see this thing all over your social media because there's tons of like spots of taking cool photos, and not just selfies, just like amazing things to photograph.
They have some cool stuff there. There's an exhibit that's like a 10-foot tall recreation of dining room furniture that you can like walk around and walk underneath, and I guess the artistic value in that, like the drive of creating that piece, is to sort of transport you back to the feeling of childhood, you know, when you were little and like maybe wandering around underneath your dining room table as a kid or something. It's supposed to just like be able to bring you back to that state of mind. There's like a giant a dog made out of what looks like balloons, like balloon art, that's huge. It's probably like, I don't know, 15 feet tall or something like that. But yeah, one of the bigger things that they have there right now is the Infinity Room, which is this experiential installation. It's only there until September 30th, but if you're talking about social media and the Broad, this is like the big thing right now. It's like all over Instagram, and it's like a big, that's what draws a lot of people to the museum. General admission to the Broad is free, but you have to get there and then have like a separate ticket to make your way into this Infinity Room. And we were reading a little bit about it. Long story short, we didn't get into this thing, but we were reading about it, and basically each person can only be inside this room for somewhere between 45 seconds to 1 minute long. That's it. And they kick you out because they have such a high demand of people wanting to go and check it out. It's basically like a room with a ton of mirrors all around and then LED lights hanging everywhere. And it just looks like, you know, space going off into infinity. It looks pretty cool based on the pictures that I've seen.
Not to interject, but DC had that exact same exhibit at the Hirshhorn Museum, the Infinity Room, where you could only be there for like 30 seconds, take a picture and leave.
Did you see it?
Yeah. No, I didn't get to because the line was so long. You had to get there like in early hours in the morning, like 7, 6 a.m. just to get in line.
And I went to the Broad, like, I want to say a few months ago, and I got there really early when it opened, and it was already sold out by the time I got there.
Yeah, it's crazy. So that's really the only thing that I wanted to talk about, was like how insane it is that the lines in this thing are that long, and like how Instagram culture has like co-opted museum culture in such a big way. Because we got there at like 2 p.m. and I asked the guy, just for kicks, I knew there was no way we were going to get in, but I asked somebody working there, like, hey, if we wanted to like put our name down on the waiting list for this thing, how long would it take? You know, what are the chances of us getting in? And he's like, oh yeah, you could go put your name down, but it'll probably be like a 5 or 6 hour wait from that point until you get in. And people, the line is insane. Like all day long, people are standing there for hours and hours and hours just to get 30 or 45 seconds in this room to take their selfies. It's so crazy to me. But
Before that, I think they had the rain room, which like you, same thing, you got to walk into, and it was raining everywhere except for where you walk. So like you'd walk around and the rain would stop wherever you were.
Yeah, my wife got to do that. She said it was really cool, but I didn't get a chance to do that one. But yeah, anyway, that's all. The exhibit is going to be on display here until September 30th. So if you love the idea of waiting 6 hours for a 45 second to a minute long experience, then go check it out at the Broad.
Okay, let's move on to the news. We have a lot of DC stuff today to talk about. I feel like lately it's been a lot of Marvel, DC, and Star Wars, and I assure you guys we're going to cover more than just that, but we can only cover what is out there and what's interesting. Okay, so yesterday we reported that DC is considering making a Joker standalone movie where it's going to show the Joker's origin story. And a day later, we found out that there's another Joker movie in development. This one, a Joker and Harley Quinn story that is going to be directed by the Crazy Stupid Love filmmakers. Brad Oman wrote it up for the site.
Yeah, so the Joker and Harley Quinn are getting their own spinoff movie. This is going to be coming from the guys who directed Crazy Stupid Love, Glenn Ficarra and John Requa. Warner Brothers and DC have had these guys developing a story about the like criminally insane romance between the Joker and Harley. This is supposed to be taking place after Suicide Squad 2, so it's hard to speculate about where we're gonna see them in this story. We don't know if it's gonna be like the beginning of their romance or if it's gonna be sort of in media res as the action is going on. It takes place sort of at the same time as some of these other DC films. This movie is going to be taking place in the DC extended universe, and now we have to specify that because the Joker origin story is not going to be in the DCEU. It's going to be part of Warner Brothers' separate comic book universe of stories that they're, you know, these one-offs and standalones that they're doing. But this one is supposed to be in the sort of main continuity, if you will. And that's really all we know right now. It's supposed to just focus on their love story. So we're sort of assuming that's going to be something like the comic book version of Bonnie and Clyde. But we know that Jared Leto and Margot Robbie are involved, and we know that the studio is looking to make this a priority, and they have to get it moving relatively quickly because they have to, they have deals with Jared Leto and Margot Robbie of how long they can be on retainer essentially to play these characters. So they sort of have to get while the getting's good, so to speak.
I mean, I want to see more of Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn in these movies, but I'm not quite sure I'm interested in seeing more of Jared Leto as a Joker or this love story between the two.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the love story in Suicide Squad between the Joker and Harley, it was like one of the worst things about it. It was like, you know, everybody was making jokes about how people were coming out of that movie and saying like, oh, hashtag relationship goals and all this stuff. And like people totally missing the point of like how poisonous that relationship is. And the idea of just making a whole movie about the love story between these two damaged characters is like, I don't think it's a great idea.
I'd prefer to see a Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy movie by the Crazy Stupid Love directors, because that sounds like fun.
Yeah, and that's another thing I should say, sorry to interrupt, is that Gotham City Sirens, which is the movie that Margot Robbie is supposed to be playing Harley Quinn again, and that one's supposed to be more of like a female-centric thing. I think Poison Ivy is supposed to be in that, maybe Catwoman. Mm-hmm. Some of the other DC, major DC female heroes and anti-heroes are supposed to be in that movie. That is also still on the table. So this is a separate movie from that. So I just wanted to clarify.
It certainly sounds like Warner Brothers does not know what they're doing, but more on that later. yesterday we reported this quote from director Matt Reeves, basically saying that the Batman would not be part of the DCEU. We did give you the quote, and that's exactly what he said. But he's taken to Twitter now to clarify his statement. And it was kind of like what you wrote in your article, HT, about. Anyways, yeah. What did he say in this clarification?
Matt Reeves tweeted today that, of course, Batman will be part of the DC universe, Batman will be Batman. In my comments from a while back, I was talking about the Batman being a story specifically about Batman and not about others in the universe, that it wouldn't be filled with cameos servicing other stories, but just Batman by himself, which makes sense. It sounds like he was just saying that it wouldn't be burdened by any world building or cameos from the Justice League members, like movies like Batman v Superman or even Wonder Woman had. Wonder Woman had, you know, a cameo from Ben Affleck's Batman in the form of like a letter and sort of a reference to her appearance in Justice League, but not strongly. So I'm guessing that Warner Bros. Is letting Matt Reeves do his own thing with Batman and just like let him be in his own little corner, which is kind of what I got the sense of, even when he said it was a standalone film, which veered uncomfortably close to what the language they're using for the Joker movie, which is why everyone got so confused. But that's the case. Batman will be in the DCEU and it will be part of the same Justice League Batman.
Oh, that's too bad, because now we can't see Alfred, you know, open up files on Batman's computer and play, you know, trailers for upcoming DC films. I'm so looking forward to that. Also in the news is James Cameron is, you know, doing a lot of press recently, and he was asked about Wonder Woman. James Cameron has always been a filmmaker who has had strong female leads in his films. And he was asked by The Guardian about Wonder Woman. He said all the self-congratulatory backpatting Hollywood's been doing over Wonder Woman has been so misguided. She's an objectified icon, and it's just male Hollywood doing the same old thing. I'm not saying I didn't like the movie, but to me, it's a step backwards. Sarah Connor was a beauty icon. Was not a beauty icon. She was strong. She was troubled. She was a terrible mother, and she earned the respect of the audience through pure grit. And to me, the benefit of characters like Sarah is so obvious. I mean, half the audience is female. I think it would be a mistake for me to comment on this when I have a woman on the podcast who could do a much better job. So, HT, what do you think of this comment from James Cameron?
So, the word I hate the most is strong when describing strong female characters. Because when I think of strong female characters, I think of female characters who are well-written, complex, and have their own agency and motivations, not because they are kick-ass or have strong male qualities like Sarah Connor has that James Cameron is speaking of. So the way that James Cameron is speaking of Sarah Connor versus Wonder Woman is he's kind of raising up these male strong qualities of like physical strength and ability to actually hold their ground on the battlefield, although Wonder Woman has that too, versus feminine qualities, which are considered weaker, like compassion, like empathy. And I hate that those qualities are always considered weaker. They are not. They are.
Or even beauty. I feel like.
Or even beauty.
Yeah.
I think it's completely reductive the way that he's approaching Wonder Woman as a pinup icon. It sounds like he didn't even see the movie. He's just talking about her in the pop culture zeitgeist, and that's a whole nother problem. But the Wonder Woman that we saw in the movie as played by Gal Gadot is everything that he says. She's complex. She has, you know, she has her own issues. She comes in with this very black and white worldview that gets changed throughout the course of the film. And she's flawed in those aspects. She's not just like this perfect, wide-eyed character who comes in just to be adored because she's beautiful. She has these strengths of character that make her worth cheering on and being a strong female character, which is the word, again, I hate. But yeah, I dislike that sort of venerance that we have for female characters who only embody what male characters have, or like what we think of as great female characters.
A great female character isn't a great female character because they're more masculine than the general, you know, feminine archetype. Like, I think that's a mistake.
Agreed. And I would like to say that Sarah Connor, though she is a great character, she kind of is this based in this sort of old sense of or this archaic sense of how we think of strong women is that they're isolated. They're not surrounded by other women. And I think that Wonder Woman, Diana, is so much stronger by being surrounded by all these other equally strong and complex female characters around her. And I really like that we're having more of that kind of representation, that women can be strong with other women. They don't have to be competing or, you know, thrown against each other. I have a lot to say about this, but again, James Cameron is wrong.
And for our final piece of DC news on today's podcast, we have some live action Teen Titans casting that is colorblind. Mm-hmm. HT, you wrote this article for the site. What do we know?
So Anna Diop was cast as Starfire in the Teen Titans live action series, which is simply called Titans. And it's going to be on Warner Bros. Digital service. So it won't actually be under the CW, which is where Greg Berlanti mostly works, who is helping to run the show. The show is also being run by Akiva Goldsman and Jeff Johns. But they're going to be first Teen Titans, or Titans rather. It's going to be the first in the slate of DC branded content to premiere on the digital service. Aside from that, Anna Diop, she is an actress from 24 Legacy, and she is a Black actress who's cast as Starfire, an orange-skinned princess or alien princess from Tamaran. Yes, Tamaran. So there were some, when this casting first happened, I did see a few people on Twitter complaining about it, which was very odd to me because I don't understand why you complain about a Black actress being cast as an orange-skinned alien, but apparently they think that Starfire has more Caucasian qualities. But whatever. Anna Diop, I'm sure, will be great in the role. And she is another notch on the sort of trend of colorblind casting that Greg Berlanti has really spearheaded in the DC TV universe, which is really exciting. And I hope that it will someday make its way over to lead superhero roles rather than just the supporting characters, as well as movies, yeah, hopefully. But Greg Berlanti has been very adamant about having diverse casts in his shows. We saw that first with the casting of Iris West as a Black actress, Candace Patton, which resulted in us getting a Black Wally West played by Kenyon Lonsdale. We saw Franz Alishane Drama take, I feel like I butchered his name, but he took on the role of Jax Firestorm. And we saw Anna Diop with Starfire, which is really exciting. So I wrote in my article that this kind of trend that's going on, how we're seeing it more in TV, but less so in movies. We do see Chloe Bennett take on the role of the main character in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and she is a half Asian actress who is playing Daisy Johnson, who was traditionally Caucasian in the comics. So that's really exciting. But what I hope to see is maybe we'll see Miles Morales come on to the big screen at some point, or have some sort of colorblind casting for a main superhero rather than just another white male named Chris as our many, you know, but heroes in the Marvel universe or DC universe.
There's a lot of white males named Chris that need some work. So
that's true. Oh, although the DCEU actually has been really good about racially forward, like, casting. Jason Momoa was cast as Aquaman, and Jason Momoa is Polynesian. Aquaman has always traditionally been blonde and white. So that's another example of the DC universe being actually much, ironically, much more progressive when it comes to casting people of color than Marvel.
Yeah, where Marvel is getting flack for their Doctor Strange casting choices. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is enough of the DC news. We'll return to DC in the mailbag later on. moving up from DC, we'll go to Star Wars. The Obi-Wan movie is reportedly rumored to be in development, and we now know a working title for that project. Ben, what do we know? What does it mean?
Yes. So a website called Omega Underground says that the new working title for the Obi-Wan movie is Joshua Tree. And that is the name of a species of desert tree. It's also the name of a major national park here in Southern California. It's not too far from L.A. as far as what this could mean, there are a couple different things that immediately came to mind for me. So one is that the, you know, calling this movie something that is like a desert park immediately harkens to Tatooine, right? Like that's the key location that we think of when we think about Obi-Wan Kenobi, because he spent so much of his life there, and you know, looking over Luke and all of this, and that's where we first met him in the 1977 Star Wars film. So
that's also where we assume this movie is going to take place, in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope somewhere.
Exactly, yes. So it's possible that Lucasfilm already knows that they want to set this spinoff movie on Tatooine, because like you just mentioned, that seems like the most logical place for an Obi-Wan solo movie. And in the article that I wrote on the website, you can read about a possible connection that the comics might have to what this movie could be. But it's possible that they could film some sequences in Joshua Tree, but the script hasn't even been written yet, so I think it's way too early to start talking about stuff like that. I think in all likelihood, this working title, if indeed it is the real one, is more of just a nod to where we saw Obi-Wan first in 1977. Because if you look at the young Han Solo movie, that film's working title was Red Cup, which is just a play on the word solo and didn't actually tell us anything about that movie's story. So I'm not sure how much we can really extrapolate from this. But if you want to dive a little bit deeper, I wrote some stuff on slashfilm.com that you can read about the tree and the role of the tree in the Star Wars universe, and this concept of force trees, which we've written about a bunch on the site in The Last Jedi.
And this is stuff that like has come up just in the last couple of years. So it's not like, you know, old legends chronology. It's stuff that they are introducing for the future of Star Wars, which makes me think maybe there's something there, but who knows.
Yeah for sure. And I think you first wrote about it with the Shattered Empire comics, and that was in 2015, and then there's theoretically a tie to some force trees in The Last Jedi coming up, so you can read all about that in the article at slashfilm.com. but as of right now, Joshua Tree is the working title for the Obi-Wan movie.
Also in the news, James Gunn is reportedly working on a Starsky and Hutch reboot that he might actually direct for. So we don't know very much about this. Gunn has come out on Twitter and said that there's a lot of misinformation about the Starsky and Hutch TV show out there. We do know that the Hollywood Reporter story that reported this said that Paramount passed on it, and we know that Paramount didn't pass on it. But we don't know if this is going to actually come about or not. I'm not a person that has strong ties to Starsky and Hutch. Jack Drew, who wrote the article on slashfilm.com, is much more passionate about this franchise. I also didn't like that movie reboot that happened a few years ago, 2004. Starring Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson. Do either of you have any love for Starsky and Hutch?
Not really. I never even saw the reboot, so I do not know much about it.
I didn't grow up watching the show, but at the time I liked the movie, and it was definitely one of the lesser Ben Stiller, Owen Wilson comedies from around that era, but I thought it was charming enough. I don't know about it. Just seems like another thing where they're just like, oh, name recognition. Let's go. People recognize this. So I don't know. I'm not thrilled about the idea. But if James Gunn is writing the script, maybe he'll be able to sort of break through what is probably a pretty outdated and lame premise for a broadcast or a cable show or whatever these days. And maybe he can tap into something a little bit deeper that will make this worth watching.
Yeah. And also, James Gunn's supposedly doing that Knight Rider movie. I mean, at least according to David Hasselhoff.
So, damn it, Peter. We said we weren't going to talk about Knight Rider anymore.
Okay. That is all for the news. Let's jump into the mailbag. To submit your questions to the mailbag, send them to peter@slashfilm.com. Include your name and general geographic location in case we mention it on the air. In today's mailbag, Ali from Saudi Arabia. We have listeners in Saudi Arabia. That's crazy. Says, big fan of Slash Film for years. Wanted to ask, do you think Justice League will destroy everything that Wonder Woman has accomplished for the DC Extended Universe? Let me clarify again that that was not my wording. That's Ali from Saudi Arabia. So I think to approach this question, I think, let's start off like, what do we think is happening here? Because it seems like there's a lot of, they're course correcting. After Wonder Woman, they're changing the direction that the ship is going. Ben, what do you think is going on?
It's weird because we talked about this when we were sort of surprised by the news the other day. Hope and optimism were two of the big key words that Warner Brothers has sort of trotted out in the wake of the success of Wonder Woman. And they've talked about how they're going to shift the perspective of the DC extended universe, like the cinematic movies, to embrace those terms, right? To bring a brighter tone to all of these movies. But then with this whole new recent slate of information, it's like now they're making a dark and gritty 80s style Joker origin story movie. So that certainly doesn't sound like hopeful or optimistic. So it does seem like they're
and also
going
this Joker and Harley Quinn love story does not really sound that
hopeful.
Yeah,
I mean, because that relationship is so terrible. But I think
it's not just terrible; it's toxic. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I don't. So look, I like that DC is looking to separate themselves from Marvel. That's what they've been trying to do ever, you know, from the beginning, right? They've sort of like backed their way into a cinematic universe. They've been chasing Marvel from the start, and this is a good way of doing these one-offs, I think, is a good way to further distinguish themselves, to say, hey, we're going to be releasing movies in the theaters, you know, once every couple years. Batman is going to be Ben Affleck in one of them, and then maybe Batman is going to be somebody else in the other, or Jared Leto is going to be Joker, and then maybe the Joker is going to be somebody else in another one. So it's like, I like the idea that they're looking to differentiate themselves, but I just don't know what their overall strategy is. If that's their strategy, if they're just like Brad said in his article, it seems like they're just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what's going to stick.
HT, what do you think? What do you think Warner Brothers needs to take away from Wonder Woman going forward?
I think that the Warner Brothers executives seem genuinely perplexed at what made Wonder Woman so successful, and that was, you know, the hope and the optimism, like Ben said earlier, that it that Wonder Woman had in the movie, but also just the aspirational qualities that. You know, it's what I go to DC for, is that like these are larger than life figures, and that's okay because they are inspirational role models that you can, you know, look up to and try to aspire towards. But I mean, I feel like they are somewhat attached to the Christopher Nolan sort of brand of that gritty realism, and they know that Batman is their biggest moneymaker still, despite Wonder Woman becoming the number one grossing movie of the summer this year and crossing the 800 million mark domestically, and crossing the 800 million mark worldwide.
Unfortunately, those yellow guys are still worldwide.
That's true. Well, you know, can't fight them, those minions. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like they are torn between what made Wonder Woman so successful, but also what has worked for them in the past. And I don't understand what they're doing, honestly. I was really hopeful when Wonder Woman came out and they went through this whole pivot and were like, we're going to be light. We're no longer going to be gritty. We're going to be sidelining all our previous sort of nihilistic driven dramas and sort of subversive superhero elements that we had in Batman v Superman and Man of Steel. But I feel like they don't understand Wonder Woman and they don't understand Superman, because Superman is very much in the vein of what Wonder Woman was, and he should be that. And he definitely, I feel like Warner Bros. Kind of follows Zack Snyder's hatred towards Superman. They don't seem to know what to do with him.
Did you just call them Warner Bros?
Sorry.
No, I love that.
Warner Bros, the bros at Warner. I don't know if it was Justice League that will outright destroy what Wonder Woman has accomplished in the DC Extended Universe, quote unquote, but it might be whatever the Warner Brothers executives are trying to do with everything else. So
I'm gonna look at this. I'm gonna choose to look at this a little bit more optimistically. I'm gonna say that Justice League is going to be the last gasp of the stylistic, like the aesthetic that Warner Brothers has committed to with the DC Extended Universe. And I think I'm guessing that this is going to be the last project that the last major superhero movie in the DCEU that Zack Snyder directs for them. I think we wrote an article not long ago that was about how he is sort of scaling back, or they, I guess, are scaling back the Snyder's involvement overall. Mm-hmm. I think that they have seen the outpouring of love for Wonder Woman. And I have to think that, especially with the movie being as financially successful as it is, and as critically beloved as it is, that they are going to see that and try to cater their future things toward that mentality as much as possible. So I think Justice League, I hope that Joss Whedon is going to be able to curb some of Zack Snyder's worst tendencies as a filmmaker. But I, even if it's bad, I'm not ready to write off the DCEU yet, because I think they're very much like in stasis right now, or like in they're shifting, right? Like they're still in the middle of that pivot. And I think we aren't going to really know what the DCEU, what they want that to look like for another couple years. So, I'm going to hope that they know what they're doing in the long term and are just going to, lean toward what people like.
I just hope they don't see Wonder Woman as a fluke. Like a lot of Hollywood has often seen female-led movies or minority-led movies as flukes whenever they become successful. See Bridesmaids, see Girls Trip. I hope that they see Wonder Woman as the beginning of a new era, instead of just, oh, this was a fluke accident. We're not going to have another female-led movie just because, it was all of these elements that made this successful, not just people want more of women. People want more of hope and compassion,
Yeah, totally.
And to what you said earlier, studios have a history of looking at things and taking the wrong lessons from mm-hmm. things. I think they looked at the Nolan films, and not just Warner Brothers, but all of Hollywood looked at the Nolan Batman movies and were like, oh, people want gritty and real. And I don't think that's the lesson to be taken from, The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight's like, probably one of my favorite movies. I'm not sure if it's in my top 10. But I think the lesson there is people want something that isn't stupid. A superhero movie that isn't stupid. They want something that's smart, that is created by an auteur filmmaker, and, isn't playing to the lowest common denominator. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the lesson they should have took. I'm not a Zack Snyder hater. I also don't love Batman vs. Superman. I like Man of Steel. And I just think that Warner Brothers probably picked the wrong director for this, this universe.
Not to analyze too deeply into the pop culture landscape, but I think that the time that the Nolan movies came on, it was like this post 9/11 time where a lot of films were becoming much darker and much more realistic. And that really reflected, the political and pop culture landscape of the time. But now I'm going to go political in this era of Trump and just awful things happening in the news every day. People are looking towards escapism, which is why I think Warner Brothers is at a confusing point, because they don't know whether to look at the past success of those films at that certain time in the last 10 years, or to look at what audiences want now, which is the escapist optimism of Wonder Woman.
So. I know we're past the 1980s and we're past the montage stage of movies, but as a kid, I used to watch the, Richard Donner Superman movie, and I used to love in the sequels to that. And I used to love those montages of Superman saving people. And it's fun, hopeful, you know. You don't get that from, even Wonder Woman, I don't think has enough of that. And I feel like DC should be heading in that direction. I know that you can go in that direction and get to Hallmark Channel ish, but I think that's something that Marvel isn't doing. And I think, you know, I think it is smart for Warner Brothers to try to do something different than Marvel. And I think in the end, them trying to create the cinematic universe, this DCEU, felt too much like they were trying to do what Marvel was doing. I mean, essentially, you know, Justice League, I know there hasn't been much out, but, you know, there's this bad guy that's trying to collect these boxes. And then once he gets these boxes, he can destroy the world. It's essentially Thanos. And I know it's from the comics, and I know, you know, I'm not sure who came first or what, but it is kind of like the same thing. So,
yeah, I think when it comes down to it, it's all about what HT said earlier about the aspirational qualities of these characters. These are supposed to be people that are the best of us, and they represent the things that we should be hoping to be and you know, trying to shape ourselves into being more like Superman. And that means more of those scenes you're talking about, Peter, more, you know, empathetic toward other people and like looking to save people instead of brooding all the time. So I think if they can just embrace that idea and then build everything else around that, I think they'll be able to come out of this okay. And that's different enough from Marvel, where I feel like they'll still be able to do that. Because Marvel, you know, Marvel movies are great, but there's a lot of like snark and stuff in there too. There are some heartfelt moments here and there as well. But there's a lot of like the humor and stuff in Marvel movies, and like the general attitude of Marvel movies is different than the aspirational qualities that we saw in Wonder Woman. So I think if they really, you know, embrace that, they'll be fine.
I agree with both of you completely. I feel like what Peter was saying before, DC was trying too hard to both be like Marvel, but be the opposite of them at the same time. So instead of going light and funny, they went dark and gritty. Yeah. But I think with Wonder Woman, they could do something completely different than what Marvel is doing and just go for the earnestness that Wonder Woman showed, like you guys were both saying. Because Marvel has always been, you know, very funny and very glib. But I feel like they don't have enough of those genuine hero moments that we saw in Wonder Woman. And I feel like DC could build a whole brand off of that, because that's what I come to DC for. And I think that's what a lot of people come to DC for.
I guess we're just going to have to wait and see when Justice League comes out. I know I've already said this before, but it's going to be interesting, because if this is a good movie, everybody's going to, you know, credit Joss Whedon and Geoff Johns. If this is a bad movie, it's you know, all Zack Snyder's fault. I think that's unfair, but we'll have to see. We'll have to see where this heads, and I'm sure in the next week we'll have another 10 DC standalone movies that are rumored to be in development, so we'll find out. You can find more of HT's work on /film and HTranBuoy on Twitter. You can find Ben at BenPairs on Twitter and on /film, me at /film, and on /film.com, of course. If you have questions to submit to the mailbag, send them to peter@slashfilm.com. You can subscribe to Slash Film Daily on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, and all the popular podcast apps. This is published every weekday. So come back tomorrow. We'll have more. Please go to iTunes, rate and review us, spread the word, help us out, and thanks for listening.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.